Maybe. Hello, everyone, and welcome to War of the Stars, a Star Wars podcast. Once again, we are coming to you from deep within the Outer Rim, far beyond the watchful eyes of the Galactic Empire. It is 2022, and we are back. My name is John Mark Tolley. Joining me, as always, is my host, Will. Will, how are you today, good sir?
Bright Suns, I'm doing great, John. I hope you're doing well. Hope you had a nice holiday and a good celebration of the past year and into 2022. Here we are.
Yep. It was a great holiday. My wife joked with all the stuff that I got that this Christmas was brought to you by Star Wars. got a lot of good Star Wars stuff. I don't know if you can see it, but my ring.
Oh, nice.
It's a Darth Vader.
Oh, it's cool. Very nice.
It's rubber. It's like a rubber kind of thing, but
that's all right.
I can't remember the company that she got it from, but she said they had like a Han Solo one, R2-D2 one, a Yoda one, a C-3PO one, all different colors. So she asked me a while back what my favorite character was in Star Wars. I'm like, well, Darth Vader. And she's like, really? I'm like, yeah, I like Darth Vader. So she got me the Darth Vader ring. You could also see behind me the Empire Strikes Back.
Yep.
Photo poster.
Yeah, nice.
So now that I have the original Star Wars, the Empire Strikes Back, I just need the Return of the Jedi.
There you go.
Which actually I'm hoping I can find a Revenge of the Jedi one. The original
I'm sure you can.
Yeah.
I remember when I was in college, they used to have guys selling movie posters. You know, I don't know if you remember that you go into like the student center and there would be just one day or 2 days, there'd be just a whole series of tables with guys selling bootleg cassette tapes, kids, and also old movie posters, some rolled, some folded. And I must, not expensive, but original posters. I must have collected, 30, 40 different posters over the course of a few years, like the Spanish release of Star Wars, Italian release of Empire, just all sorts of fun stuff. Cause it was all different art. It wasn't like the newer movies that utilize the same imagery, but yeah. So my Christmas was kind of, in terms of gifts, was kind of quiet. We opted instead to give each other a trip down to Florida to visit our daughter who's working down there. And so we had a kind of nice Disney vacation. And it's fun when we go down to see her because we usually, it's a Disney trip for us because she works in Disney, but she doesn't live in Disney, obviously. She lives in Davenport, which is about a 15-minute drive to Disney Springs or the Animal Kingdom Lodge, where she usually sets up to do her work. And but it was when we go down and we book a hotel, she just jumps in and stays with us. And now instead of having to drive 15, 20 minutes and having to brave I-4 traffic, she only has to, get into her car in a parking lot and then drive to work, do her shift, and come 5 minutes back to where
the
hotel is. So it's a nice thing, and it's a little more expensive to travel this time of year down there between flying and hotel. So we opted for no gifts, except we did give each other, I gave my family the gift of COVID. Sad to say, I contracted it. My wife did as well. Our daughter didn't test yet. We don't know for sure she had it, but we think she had it. But we were all vaccinated and boosted, and we all had breakthrough cases, which I think is going to be very common, and it wasn't bad. The only thing that's happening, you hear an occasional cough from me. Other than that, I'm fine. I can breathe great. I never lost smell or taste, not losing any more hair than I already have lost just from being me. And any other scary symptoms have not happened, have not manifested. And I'm feeling pretty good. So
that's good. I also got this cool pew pew homemade shirt from my mother-in-law.
Beautiful.
That was very cool getting all that. Just you know, like I said, my daughter got a little baby Grogu, stuffed Grogu with the complete with the bag, so she can carry him around like she's the Mandalorian and have all kinds of adventures with him. And so, but yeah, it was a really fun. It was a good Christmas, good quiet New Year. We didn't, because we were quarantined too, not because we had COVID, but we were exposed. I had to quarantine for a few days until I got my negative results back. So New Year's for us was just kind of sitting around watching TV and doing a little, basically nothing.
Yeah. I'm getting to watch Boba Fett.
Yeah.
The book of Boba Fett.
The book of Boba Fett, which, good segue, by the way. I like that. We are going to be looking at and kind of doing our own little review of chapters 1 and 2 of the book of Boba Fett. First, I mean, let's just, you know, initial thoughts.
My initial thought is that I am very much enjoying it. Mm-hmm. I am enjoying the world building that I'm seeing in these, and we'll talk more about that. I'm enjoying the character development of Boba Fett. I am kind of looking at it from a kind of an amazing thing of thinking that this character from the holiday special, this character that was going to be a super stormtrooper that just, you know, they put out and made into just a really cool looking character that had 4 lines of dialogue.
Yeah.
Has grown into this amazing story.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just loving it. I'm just eating it up. Yeah. I like the character. I like the character more now than I ever did. I like the character more. Meaning like I didn't like the character. I never really thought Boba Fett was anything more than a bounty hunter. You know, he captured Han Solo. That was what he was. He looked cool. Mm-hmm. I thought he looked cool, but I didn't think some people worship this character, and mm-hmm. I just never did. I think it was just because of the whole, the Kenner action figure was supposed to have the firing Boba, you know, the missile and everything. Incidentally, if you haven't gotten a chance, there is another show on Disney Plus, Behind the Armor or something of that nature. It's like a documentary all about Boba Fett.
Mm-hmm.
Watch it. It's absolutely amazing. It's very interesting.
Hmm.
Everything from the early test footage of the Boba Fett character when he was all white to his appearance in this parade and in the Marin County or Petaluma, I forget where he was marching, but he was in some kind of parade, holiday special, review, and then interviews with all the living actors that have played him. It's just a really cool kind of retrospective about
the character.
So, and it's a great companion piece to the show. But I've enjoyed it thoroughly. I can't wait for the next episode. I love the Godfather 2 style of storytelling with
mm-hmm.
a present day story parallel to a flashback story.
Yes, I like that. I like seeing his story told into from him getting out of the Sarlacc pit and getting stripped, which just shows that it's not the Tuskens who are the biggest threat on Tatooine. It's those darn Jawas.
I know, man. Give me a break. I will say this. I am also loving the Tusken Raiders. I am loving this story. I mean, and I'm loving the fact that it is a parallel of our childhood in the sense mm-hmm. of, we grew, well, maybe not our childhood, but our generations, a generation before us or so, grew up, you know, you always played cowboys and Indians.
Yeah.
Right? But cowboys were considered the good guys and the Indians were considered the bad guys.
Right.
They were the savages. They weren't intelligent. They were like one step above animals.
Yeah.
You know, that's what we were, we as humans were taught to kind of believe. Or as Americans, maybe, I don't know. And then you know, only in later depictions, things like Dances with Wolves and other types of storytelling, we start to learn and see them as different types of characters.
Yeah.
And see what, and then of course, revisionist history, we start to learn what truly happened in the Old West and how right. not romanticized, you know, it really
yeah.
was.
Yeah.
And, it's, and the suffering that, that the indigenous peoples went through. So, so we learn that. And I think that there's this same kind of parallel storytelling.
Oh, definitely. Definitely.
The first thing, the only time we see them, they're not even called Tuscan Raiders. They're called Sand People.
Sand People.
You know, and they're vicious animals that attack Luke and rummage through his land speeder and gets frightened off, you know, and that's really it. That's all we see of them. So we yeah. just see them as almost like villains, like the Empire. And then later on, usually, you know, pretty much episode two comes along, and then when Anakin slaughters them all, you know, but, you know, they also killed his mother. So, but there is, you start to get this slightly different viewpoint yeah. of it all.
Yeah.
But you, this takes it to a whole different
level. Oh, you've kind of got glimpses of that in The Mandalorian when he was on Tatooine yeah. and you saw him doing the sign language, which I thought that was a cool little thing. One thing I liked that they did with the Tuscans, and we can talk a lot about the Tuscans, and I'm hoping they don't do this, is keeping them masked. Not even when they're in their private areas and they're not taking off their masks. They're not taking, so you never see their face. And I hope that they keep that. I like this. I like that sort of air of keeping that kind of air of mystery about them, that they don't, you know.
I mean, I won't mind that if they do that.
Yeah, I won't mind if it's done the right way. You know,
that's not, exactly what I was
not,
gonna say.
Not just showing their face for showing their face for the sake of showing their face.
Right.
one thing I was noticing, and I've watched a few like different breakdown videos and stuff like that, and a couple things I've noticed of parallels to with the story, especially in the first one, which was titled Stranger in a Strange Land.
Yes.
Which is actually taken from the Bible.
Mm-hmm.
Book of Genesis, no, it was Exodus, the story of Moses. And you can see a little parallels between Boba Fett's story and the story of Moses of being lost in the desert, being taken in by this tribe, and then having to go back and kind of redeem himself. And, you know, I'm also seeing, especially with the the secondary story with him and the Tuscans, I'm seeing a lot of parallels to Lawrence of Arabia.
Yes, yes.
Absolutely. I mean, very much so. In fact, I'm wondering if that's kind of where they're leading to, is him helping to unite the different Tuscan tribes.
Yeah, I've been
like because they mentioned that they mentioned the tribes of Tatooine and So well, let's start with the first with episode or chapter one, because they like to do chapter,
right?
Where we see I don't know if you want to call it the primary story of Boba Fett.
We'll say primary and flashback.
Flashback. Boba Fett getting set up as the new head of the crime.
Setting himself up.
Setting himself up as, and I like the fact that they use the term daimyo.
What was that term again? Did they say? I heard it a few
times. Daimyo. It's a Japanese term. In feudal Japan, the daimyo was the head of a region, like a town or a village, or like maybe several towns, and then under him he would have the samurai would be under him.
Okay.
So that's kind of what a daimyo is, kind of like a warlord, basically a warlord.
Gotcha.
And then under the warlord, you'd have the samurai who would fight on his behalf. So that's kind of where. So I thought it was interesting that they used that term, the term of, you know, something, a real world correlation for what he was, and how much power he held, that even the mayor serves at his pleasure.
Yeah. I loved that that actor who played the major domo.
Yes.
I know he's an improv actor.
Yeah, he's an improv actor. I can't remember his name. He was very very sleazy, but not in a different type of sleaze. Like, you could tell, like, oh, he's a brown noser. You could tell he's a major brown noser.
One of the things I loved was how, you know, he would, when he, you know, he's on top of, you know, when Ming-Na Wang's character, Fennec Shan, says, you know, if you had spoken that way to Jabba, he would have fed you to his menagerie. And then after he says it, he slowly steps away from the trap door.
He's like,
and then once he's off, then he turns around and he's like, I would expect there would be more, you know, you'll hear from him again, you know, or something like that.
So,
you know, the whole thing, coming, people coming in and providing tribute. Mm-hmm. And, you know,
I like the fact that we're not seeing him, Boba Fett, as a pure good guy. Like, he's still a criminal. He's still a crime lord.
Well, he's a simple man trying to make his way in the universe.
Yeah.
And I love that line because, you know, you see how from his whole upbringing, think about it. A clone on Kamino, right? Mm-hmm. Or an unaltered clone. So he's not even like the rest of the clones. Mm-hmm. He's kind of away from everything else. He witnesses his whole, you know, the war, and he gets into the bounty hunter lifestyle, right? He was in the revenge lifestyle, trying to kill Mace Windu for killing his father. Then he's in, he gets, you know, shacks up with Aura Singh, with not a good role model, and, you know, so he's lived this life. Mm-hmm. And then became his own bounty hunter and got a good reputation, which abruptly ended when he got tossed into the Sarlacc pit. But then he gets sorry,
it's okay,
apologize to the listeners for the cough. I assure you I'm okay. It's just part of what I deal with is kind of a winter asthma. It's just seasonal.
Yeah.
And this whole thing really messed with it for this season. So so anyway, he's known nothing but you know, rely on himself kind of a thing. So here he is with Fennec trying to, you know, stake his claim. And, you know, it's interesting to see how all the people around him are reacting to it. So
Yeah. I
also like that, you know, it seems like there's a story going on with him still needing to use the back to tank.
Yes. Yeah. I love that. That's the catalyst for how they bring in the flashbacks of using that as a way to, like, have the dream. And I like that we're seeing different parts of Jabba's palace.
Yes.
And not just, and did you notice that the droid that is introducing all of the people, did you recognize who that is?
That's 8D8. Of course I recognize
The torture droid.
He received an upgrade.
He did.
Does he have 6 million forms of communication, or does he just know, like, 4?
I don't know.
He's also the, not, I don't believe it's the exact same model, but it's the same type of droid that in Galaxy's Edge cooks the meat.
Like,
he rotates the spit that spins the meat that's being heated by the pod racer engines and the Ronto roasters.
Yeah, it was good to see that Max Rebo survived and got a new gig.
I was so happy Max Rebo survived.
And he's with the
favorite.
And he's with the Cantina guy.
I know. It's like that's
it's a super group. Perfect.
If another thing, if you ever get a chance, do you ever watch Robot Chicken? Have you ever seen any? Okay. Well, I forget. They've done a lot of Star Wars clips.
Yeah.
But they've also done Star Wars specials, whole specials devoted with clips. And there was a clip with Max Rebo. but he talks like a 90-year-old jazz musician from New Orleans, and all he cares about is I gotta get to the gig. And at one point you see him coming in. I don't know whether he got thrown from the barge, but he survives the barge explosion. But he goes back and he's like, "Oh man, the band's all dead and the keyboard's all dead, but gotta get to the gig." And as a gigging musician, I'm like, "Oh man, I know.
Yeah,
I feel your pain, Max. I get it." And now all I think of that, my daughter and I used to say that all the time, because, you know, if I got up to go to a gig, she'd always come up to me when she was really little. She's like, "Dad, you gotta get to the gig." I said, "Yep, I gotta get to the gig." And so we're very fond of that. So, mm-hmm. So when we both saw him survive, and we looked at it, a dozen years ago. But now we look at it, and we look at each other, and we both said it in unison. He got to the gig. He made it to the next gig. So,
one thing, I wouldn't say it took me out of it, but it was just something, a little detail I wish they would have added, considering how we've seen Twilix and the animated series with that definitive Twi'lek Ryloth accent. I wish that they would have kind of incorporated that with the, you know, I don't know if it's because the actors couldn't do the French act, because every time we've seen Twi'lek in like the Clone Wars or Rebels, when they're talking in what seems to be their quote unquote natural accent, it has a very French tone to it. You think of Chom,
well, the Syndulas do.
Yeah.
But I mean, and yeah, I guess there have been a few others that we've seen, but like there was Ula and Bib Fortuna, they spoke Huttese.
Yeah.
So
you couldn't really tell. I mean,
I didn't tell there was a French accent that went along with that.
Yeah. You know? So. I, that was just a small little thing. Like it didn't ruin the movie. It wasn't the thing where I was like, "Oh, this takes me completely out of it." It's like, that would have been nice to kind of have a little, little continuity with okay. You know, you could also make the argument that, like, well, you know, Ryloth is a planet, you know, a big planet with a lot of people on it. So not everyone speaks with that accent, just like not everyone in even the United States has the same accent.
Right. So you could, it could be different dialects.
Different dialects and stuff like that.
Sure. So, all right. So we get through, we get to the beginning. Jennifer Beals character, you know, as a Twi'lek,
mm-hmm.
that, you know, obviously between the mayor's majordomo and the Twi'lek, you know, she's being awfully friendly, awfully accommodating. Can I polish your helmet? And, oh, look, here's a whole bunch of money in it. I'm going to hand it back.
I love that they're giving the Gamorreans more to do than just sit around and get, you know, tossed around like they're just like, oh, okay, these guys can actually, there's a reason why Jabba used them as...
Well, when you think about it, they were just fodder for the Sarlacc, fodder for Luke to...
Yeah.
You know.
So, yeah, it was nice to see them kind of, you know, do more than just, you know, stand around and be cannon fodder for Luke and the Sarlacc and the Rancor.
And I like the whole, like, you know, test of loyalty.
Yeah.
And you know, how Boba Fett exercised restraint.
Yeah.
You know, and instead of having a sign of power or strength, you know, showed mercy.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that makes him a good guy. I think that makes him a likable bad guy or a likable anti-hero.
Yeah, right? he definitely leans anti-hero.
And I guess we could talk more about this, but there, you know, there is a contingency of people that, you know, they want him to be cold and ruthless. And I really do feel that being cold and ruthless for the sake of being cold and ruthless makes you a cardboard
mm-hmm.
character, a cardboard cutout. And you can't have that. You have to develop it. You have to, there has to be like, you know, subtle nuance. And you just need
to. Well, and I think you know, when you're looking at a character like Boba Fett, you have to look at, you know, wanting to be cold and ruthless. Well, when he was a bounty hunter, he could be cold and ruthless.
Right.
Because, I mean, it was a job. And right. that's how he would have looked at it. It's like, I don't care if you're, you say you're guilty or you say you didn't do it. I don't care. I'm getting paid. It doesn't matter to me. I'm getting paid either way. Right. I take you in, you know. So he, you know, he could, but now that he's in a position of authority, he has to kind of look at it a different way and see how he's going to, you know, like he says, rule with respect instead of fear.
But right out of the gate from hanging out in Tatooine there, walking around, they get surrounded by, what was the name of the, we find out the next episode.
Like Midnight.
Midnight. Wind,
yeah, something like that. Yeah,
yeah, Nightwind or something like that. And they, you know, of course, I loved that. You know, they're having this great fight, and you know, we've seen Ming-Na Wen fight on things like Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. So we knew that she was always going to be good with that. But I loved watching that. You know, Temuera Morrison has taken a lot of his New Zealand tribal roots with this, and I'm really loving that, because it's not something that we see all the time, so it's a unique viewpoint. So you have that, you have the fighting style of Fennec Shand together, and if that's not enough, if they get surrounded, they're getting surrounded, then you get the Gamorrean guards.
I know, I love the Gamorrean guards coming in like this.
Yes. And I will say that is a level, a general thing I'm going to just say about the Favreau Filoni, you know, era is because, and the fact that it's programmatic television, episodic television that you're seeing on Disney Plus or on a streaming service, is that you can have moments where all of a sudden a very unlikely character or characters come in to save the day, save the moment, like Gamorrean guards or in the second season of Mandalorian, when those TIE fighters came swooping down to save the day. Yes. And we're like cheering for the Stormtrooper. We're like, oh. And then even they said that. They like, never thought I'd be so happy to see Stormtrooper. You know. So to me, that's a great thing. It's like turning it on its head.
Yeah.
Everything.
I love that they're doing, and they did this somewhat with the Mandalorian, is I think there can be the feeling of the need to, especially when you're dealing with a TV series that's a shorter series, you know, seven episodes?
I think so, yeah.
Seven episodes, to rush everything. Like, we got to get to this. We got to tell a story. We got to go. But they seem to be taking their time.
Well, I think that's because that's what happens in a movie.
Yeah.
Because when we go to see, you know, The Force Awakens, which, no complaints, love The Force Awakens and Last Jedi and Rise of Skywalker, but, you know, all movies clock in at 4 hours and they have to make make necessary cuts.
Yeah.
Unless you're Peter Jackson, you know, but but, you know, in this situation, we're really just watching a 4-hour movie.
Yeah.
But set up in chapters in a new kind of format. So,
yeah.
They can do that. You're right.
Yeah.
All right. So, and then we have a cool chase sequence with parkour.
That was cool. Yeah.
That was really fun. And it was neat that they incorporated it, jumping over all of the domes of Tatooine.
Mm-hmm.
I love how
he
says to her alive. And when she chases up to two guys, she just kicks one right over the top.
Yes.
I got one. Like, see, it's alive. It counts. I had the good fortune of when last 2 years ago, when I went to Disney to see the Candlelight Processional, which is basically the story, the telling of the Christmas story with a full orchestra and choir and celebrity narrator. And Ming-Na Wen was the narrator.
Ooh.
And she had just been announced as Fennec Shand. So, and I think she was going to be appearing like the next weekend or whatever. Nice. It was really, really cool to be with her at that point. Well, normally the celebrities are kind of like C-list, D-list celebrities, which are fine. But, you know, in her case, it was just, you know, she was, everybody knew her as Melinda May. They knew her as Mulan, and they knew her now as this Star Wars character. So
nice.
It's really cool. But I'm so happy she's on the show. Yes. And I'm so happy she didn't die in that one episode of
Mandalorian. Yeah. We see Boba Fett's escape from the Sarlacc pit.
Okay. Well, I was kind of, you know, we basically got through the first, all of the present day, quote unquote.
Yeah.
Story. So now going to, yes. Yeah. I mean, the show really opens
with him in
the Sarlacc pit. Well, he's in the back to tank, but first he talked about Kamino. So that was kind of cool. We're seeing some either unused footage or
I think so. That would be
I do think there was another actor that was listed as young Boba Fett other than Daniel Logan, which leads me to believe that they reshot. Either he was a body double or they reshot some of the scenes. But so that those were some cool scenes. And then there he is. I'm going to say one thing.
Yeah.
It's not a big thing. Like you mentioned about the Twi'lek accents. I'm in the same boat. Is that he sees a stormtrooper.
I actually have a theory.
I don't have a problem that he. No, I love that he saw a stormtrooper. That's not the issue. The issue I have is that there were no. What about the four or five or six or seven other Jabba denizens that got tossed in there before him? Where the heck were they? Unless because he had the. And then I thought, well, maybe because he had the armor on that protected him from like getting, you know.
Dissolved,
burned into, or at least totally, engulfed by the inside, entrails or whatever. But because and maybe the stormtrooper was in the same boat. Maybe he lived a little longer because he had the trooper armor on, and then eventually died, and it was degrading. But yeah, what was your thought? What were you going to say?
That was thinking, like a lot of people. I know a few people are like, well, there are no stormtroopers there when Luke went in. I'm like, well, the Sarlacc's been there for a while.
I mean, what about,
there could have been many a time where, you know, the Empire sent, you know, a stormtrooper to, you know, say like, we need some sort of tribute from you, Jabba, for allowing you to rule, or, you know, a stormtrooper, something like that. And the stormtrooper could have, you know, smarted off to Jabba one too many times and Jabba just throw him in.
Or what about just the detachment that went down to look for the droids?
Yeah.
What if they just stumbled across? You know, they could have been all over the place.
Yeah.
And they could have stumbled past the Sarlacc pit and
throat fell in. Yeah. There's all different ways that, you know.
But I loved I liked that they came out with a way for him to get out of there without the obvious, launch with the rocket or whatever. I think we established that Han Solo accidentally, albeit accidentally, kind of damaged the rocket.
Yeah.
So I like that they figured out another way to get out.
Yeah.
And I like that he was still wearing obviously he had his armor in it, but then the Jawa should come along and take it in his jumpsuits, like become bleached white.
Mm-hmm.
Either by the acid of the Sarlacc or the sun just bleaching it. And now that's kind of been his uniform or his costume, so to speak, until the very end of the second episode, which we'll get to. But so we get this Dances with Wolves kind of storytelling with him as a man, a stranger in a strange land, you know, dealing with these different Tusken Raiders, like the darker robes and a darker look, like, so clearly a different tribe than what we've used to see.
Yeah.
And the little kid, though, man.
Oh, yes.
I wanted to kick that kid. Not really, but, you know, it's just like, he's like sitting there beating him up. But then I'm thinking that's his rite of passage.
Yeah.
You know, and he does, and it does make, you know, Boba Fett stronger. You know, and then you get the whole side, kind of side story about, you know, and that stupid Rodian.
Oh.
Is it in their way to be just like sniveling coward?
It must be. I don't know. Yeah.
I remember it reminded me in some ways of if you ever read the actual prequel episode one and episode one novelization,
mm-hmm.
they talk a little more about the Nemodians, you know, like Newt Gunray and Rune Hakko and everything.
Yeah.
And they are and the way they're raised is like it, you know, they're totally like spoiled rotten. I mean, and overindulgent. It's part of their culture. They explain it, which is why they are raised to have droids take care of them and stuff like that. So, you know, it just made you think like some, you know, I guess from a cultural perspective,
yeah.
This is how they raise Tusken Raiders. And this is how they maybe they do kind of similar to Mandalorians. Maybe they do offer an opportunity to join your tribe, but you got to go through these endurances. And maybe that's what they were trying to do with Shmi Skywalker. Think about that. Then it's not like they explained to Boba Fett what they were doing. They just tied him up and did this. And he worked on it and he learned and grew and built his, you know, stamina up, you know, whereas maybe they do this with everybody and a lot of people don't survive.
It could also be, you know, you also have, because they established in second season of Mandalorian that there is a lot of mistrust between the humans and the Tuskens.
Absolutely.
The off-worlders. So, I mean, we saw this, you know, even in our history with, you know, when the white settlers started going west, and you know, where the Native Americans would, you know, it was a tit, you know, almost a tit for tat thing.
Yeah.
They weren't, you know, the natives weren't above taking prisoners, and
well, we even got a taste of that with the second season of Mandalorian with the first episode.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So, you know, we were seeing that and we were seeing evidence of what happens when you know, two tribes come together.
Yeah.
And you know, to try to defeat this gigantic great dragon.
Yeah.
And they managed to put their differences aside and do this. So.
Now, whenever he was digging in the sand and you saw the sand moving and stuff like that, and were you thinking initially like, oh, we're going to see another crate dragon? What are we going to see here?
No, I think, I didn't know what I was going to see, but then I remember watching, I forgot about the scene in the first episode of season two of The Mandalorian when they were all gathered around the Mandalorian, Cobb Vanth, and the Tuskens, and they're passing around that shell. Which had the, now there, it looked more like they were mixing something in it or whatever, but you know, it smelled horrible and whatever. So it turned out, and then you heard in the end of the second episode here that it's like the milk of whatever that creature is. And you know, it tastes it, but that's what you live off of.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's the equivalent of water. So that's what they use to survive. And
so you're thinking it was, I always got the feeling it was like a vegetable, like some sort of.
He said something in the second episode about milk.
The milk of, well, I mean, you could say because they call the coconut.
Coconut milk, yeah. It could just be milk of a plant or whatever.
Like
a plant,
yeah. Because that's kind of what I got the feeling was like a plant that had.
Yeah, but it wasn't water. It wasn't straight water. It was like some type of a fluid that comes from whatever that creature, that living organism is.
So
they started finding those things and you know, he's going through these tests.
Yeah.
And
He fights a monster.
Fights a monster. Yeah, love it. Ray Harryhausen, Clash
of the Titans. I thought the same thing. There's in the second episode, there's another thing where I thought very Ray Harryhausen with the droid that was working the train. Yeah. The way he moved, I'm like, that is very Harryhausen.
Well, somebody set up a meme that said, Book of Boba Fett doesn't know if it wants to be Star Wars or Dune or Clash of the Titans. And I said, my comment to that was that, and I am totally there for that because it's fun to kind of jump around genres a little bit, and see how this goes. So anyway, so he manages to, have a nice little adventure moment. You get rid of that other Rodian. But I love how at the end, the kid's walking back with the head of the beast. Like, look at what I got. Oh, look at me. And he tells the story. Yeah, and he tells the story like he's the one who did it. But the head, I love how the head Tusken, he's standing there next to Boba, and he's like, here's some water. I know you helped with this. There's no way that little kid did that on his own. But it was like a step understanding without – how great was it that so much of the storytelling happened without even dialogue?
I like that. Yeah, so much done without –
You didn't need it. You did not need it. You told
And it wasn't until I think it was the second episode that we even got really any type of subtitles for the Tusken.
Right, right. Well, yeah, I think when he was explaining the whole thing about the tribes, I think that was a little bit too complex for him to do with sign language alone. Yeah. So
yeah.
But that pretty much wraps up the first season.
That wraps up the first episode.
The only other thing I thought was interesting was how he was, he's damaged goods. Like physically Boba Fett is damaged. He has to take regular treatments in the back to tank. I don't know how long that's going to be, if that's going to be a set amount and then it's going to end, or if he's going to have to constantly be doing it because of all the scarring he suffered from being in the Sarlacc. Like, when he woke up, he was on his last breath. He just happened to have the protection from the armor that gave him a little extra time that, like I said, maybe none of those other Jabba denizens had. So, but it affected him. So now he's really trying hard to, to be able to be strong, and he needs that back to tank to do that. And I'm curious to see if that's going to be something that happens with him moving forward. If that's going to be part of his story, is the health that he struggles with. But we should go on to the next one.
Excellent. We start with Fennec Shan leading him into. We see the raising of that iconic gate, walking into Jabba's palace, and I love the. Kind of the almost nonchalant way Fennec Shan is about the assassin, just saying like,
oh, you're paying for the name.
You're paying for the name.
Yeah,
and how he's so tough until he gets dropped into the Rancor pit.
Oh, that was so good.
That just the look of utter terror on his face, how quickly he just starts singing,
and. There's nothing down there. Now, and it's true. I think that was, I think some people were like, oh, it'd be so cool if there was a Rancor, but I'm like, really? I mean, are you just going to just completely tell the same story? Come on.
Yeah.
And I know that there are people, first of all, Fennec said, Jabba would have fed you to his menagerie.
Yeah. Which means
we've only seen one Rancor, and that Rancor was killed. But then everybody talks about the Rancor from Bad Batch.
Yeah.
That they wrangle Moochie.
Which I believe was sold to Jabba.
Right. But, was it definitively set up to be a different?
It was. Because they gave that, the Jabba's Rancor, I can't remember what its name was, but it did have a name.
Oh, okay. Well, I didn't know if that was something people were just speculating or not. But in any case. you know, you don't know.
But yeah, that was a nice little bait, you know, I don't want to say bait and switch, but nice little and I love that it was, you know, the mayor's an Ithorian.
Yeah.
Which there's a lot of speculation. Is it the same Ithorian that we saw in A New Hope?
That's Moma Hadan. He has a character.
Oh,
name.
Okay.
And I think it's Moma Hadan. I think it's what it's called. Momaw, I think.
Yeah.
So yeah, he has a name. He has a whole story. And I don't know if maybe, I mean, I understand that. I don't know. I know that Lucasfilm kind of blew up the expanded universe, but yeah. What I don't know is if they blew up the names of the characters. As a collector, you know, the characters all have names.
I don't know if they do. I don't believe they, but that could just be.
All of the Cantina aliens, you know, originally they were Hammerhead. There were Walrus Man, there were, you know, like Snaggletooth, you know, there were all these kind of simple names. And then they, things like West End Games or whatever gave them character names. So I think that his character has a name, and it's not, I don't think so. Plus, even if it was, it just doesn't look like the same character.
Yeah, it doesn't look like
that. If you ever watch the action figure, when they've made him more recently, like resculpted. That thing is huge. The head is like really wide. So the one from Book of Boba Fett seemed a little thinner. So
yeah.
What about what did your wife say?
We noticed, and she didn't know the name of the alien, but I noticed a lot of can't pronounce the name.
Trandoshans
on Tatooine. There was a lot of those guys out there.
I know. It's like crazy.
Yeah.
And so.
I loved when they went to the mayor's office and the typical guy at the desk, you know,
he's like, "You have an appointment?
You have an appointment?"
Like, I know.
Boba Fett. Let's see.
Yeah, and then with that, you know, he's taking them. He was denying any involvement with the assassination attempt.
Yeah, even treating it like a bounty being brought in.
Saying
that they're allowed to operate outside of Hutt space.
Yes. Then sending them over to back to the Flashdance girl, Jennifer Beals' character. And she's kind of a little taken back. And talks about the twins.
Oh.
And then,
I love it because this is a take back to the first episode when even Fennec Shan says you need to, you know, tells him like you should be being carried around on your litter. You know, it's a sign of power, it's a sign of respect.
Everybody's saying you should be carried on their litter. And Boba Fett's like, I don't want to carry, I walk on my own 2 feet.
Yeah, but, and then I felt sorry for the guys for all those people having to carry. Not just one like
30 guys. I mean
Not just one hut, but two.
Yeah. And they're
I like the fact that it has to be CGI, but you could still see them, you know, the actor, you know, acting, you know, holding it up and trying to adjust. And
okay, let's talk about that. What was your thought on the quality of the CGI for the two huts?
I liked it.
Okay. I'm going to say this. I liked it too.
Yeah.
But I got to tell you, I've never been a hater on any CGI Jabba or any CGI Hutts, and I'll tell you why.
Yeah.
Because I think that the overly critical comments made from the time Jabba appeared in the special edition, which is the first time we had a digital Jabba, till now, and there were complaints about these two Jabba, the twins. My feeling is that, look, guys, I get it. All right, we all want to be nostalgic about the Stuart Freeborn awesomeness that was Jabba the Hutt.
Yeah.
But there just makes no financial sense to build and puppeteer not one, but two.
Yeah.
Of these characters for what is literally going to be maybe two scenes, maybe three, in the entire seven episodes of this story. Okay, yeah. It makes no sense to do that. It is a slug-like character that worked as a live character when our minds and our eyes were used to seeing creatures in real form, but usually in the background. This was a main character, and it was something that I don't think our eyes would be, because of CGI and because of what creatures have been out there, I just don't think our eyes could see the anatomy of a hut like the 1983 version. To do that again now would be so expensive, and I just don't think our eyes would, it wouldn't work right. I don't think we'd see it right.
Yeah,
I think we forgive it for Jabba the Hutt because we're used to Jabba the Hutt.
Yeah,
but to do it any other way, it doesn't make sense. And I think they've improved. I think that they've made major improvements. And I think they will continue to do so. But I think we need to allow, this is one area I think CGI needs to continue to build and evolve and grow. And we as an audience need to accept it. That's just me.
Yeah. So. One thing I liked, and I'm looking at the time, so we might have to do a part two of this.
I think we could wrap it up. It's all right. We'll do when we get it. We'll just keep going until you're ready to stop. And then we'll just follow up and you know, connecting it into episode three.
Because there's so much to talk about with this. I love the fact that we're getting a little bit more on the huts as far as how they're treated in this area when he says when Fennec says we have to get permission to kill them.
Right.
Like you can't just kill a hut. You have to get some sort of and what did you think of the Wookiee?
I have not. I don't know the character. Apparently,
Black Curtis, and according to what I saw, even the comic, they actually work together.
Right.
And Boba Fett had a
in this comic.
Yeah.
Now, putting that aside, what a great reveal!
Oh yeah, not just seeing another a live action, because I don't. We haven't really seen any other than the Christmas special. We haven't seen a lot of other. What's that?
Captain Tarful from Revenge of the Sith, but wasn't a huge character. But I mean, he was.
Yeah,
a huge,
yeah. We saw Wookiees there, but
see too many.
Yeah, and seeing a black furred Wookiee.
Well, I was just amazed at the look with the gladiator like entrance.
Yeah,
the spikes on the shoulder. Pauldron, the eyes of that. I mean, what amazing eyes. So I didn't even have to know that this character existed somewhere else. I was impressed with that entrance, and I certainly hope we see more of that character.
Yeah, so even my wife said, I was like, oh, that's a Wookiee on steroids. Like, it just looked menacing. Another thing
that's happened, you know, over the course of the years is that, you know, Chewbacca has, among Wookiees, has been kind of shown to be a smaller statured Wookiee in terms of size, because Peter Mayhew was very tall, but he was also very thin, and Yonah Tsutomu is the same way. So but these other when they made Revenge of the Sith, I believe they hired an Australian basketball team, and there were six guys, but they happened to be huge, and they gave them muscle suits. So these six guys who were tall basketball players all put on these muscle suits. And so they were big. They were like brawling, big, huge Wookiees.
Yeah.
Yeah. You put Chewbacca next to them. I mean, they made Chewbacca up a little bit better, a little bit more. But he was still scrawny compared to them. So anyway, it is just – that's just the way of it. But, I really hope we see more of that character.
Yeah. I noticed in this one they – in episode two, the main story seemed to be the flashback story. That you didn't.
Yes.
They kind of cut off from the present day story, quote unquote, to go back to the flashback, and they really focused on, you know, him living with the Tuskens. And I love the train heist part of it. and seeing the train going through the deck and really bringing in that Old West vibe of,
I mean, you're talking another Lawrence of Arabia kind of thing. Back to the Future.
Yeah.
I was totally getting Back to the Future vibes because of the whole, like, every couple of minutes, the train went into a thrust and they all fell over.
Butch Cassidy.
Yeah. Oh, but we got to also talk about Anchorhead. We got to talk about Anchorhead. I know. I didn't even think that it was Anchorhead. And not only was it Anchorhead, it was Tashi Station.
The two actors that were in there, they were the same actors that were in the deleted scene.
Oh, I don't think they were the same actors.
Were they not the same actors? Same characters.
The actors themselves.
Now that I think about it, they would be like maybe in Luke's 70s age. Maybe Luke's age. But yeah, same characters.
I know that the guy who played Fixer or whatever his name is, I know he's been trying to get back into it. I'm sure he's kind of ticked off now. He's like, what? I would have done it. I would have put on a wig and, you know, you could have de-aged me. It would have been great. But they really didn't, since they were never in the movie to begin with, they didn't really need to reuse the actors. So they just brought in two other actors. But I love they use the hairstyles. Fixer and Cammy, right? That's who they are.
Fixer and Cammy. And I love that even the games that the biker gang was playing looked retro.
It was the exact same game that they play in the deleted scene.
Yeah. And I love that even the biker, like, they're true biker gang. They even had the leather jacket with the writing, and someone actually translated what it says on the back in the Arabic letters, just says Tatooine.
Yeah,
it's like they're the Tatooine biker gang.
So cool. And then so you got Boba Fett going in there.
And just cleaning house.
Cleaning house.
I love it. He just goes in there, beats, you know, just...
Very Clint Eastwood.
Just takes a drink, doesn't say anything, and he just walks out.
And then he comes back with the speeders, and then he's trying to teach them.
Oh, that was so... I love, you know... Star Wars always has great humor, and even this is no exception of seeing them. And I love that one poor Tusken trying to learn how to jump from one speeder to the other and keeps falling off. And
well, it was great to see this two-way exchange of learning.
Especially the one Tusken teaching him how to use the Gaffy stick. How to fight with the Gaffy training stick.
I like he's got the training Gaffy stick.
Yeah, the wood one.
And then we have this train that's just amazing. You feel a sense of understanding why they need to try to take this train out. Mm-hmm. And the other reason I might have mentioned Back to the Future was because for those who don't remember Back to the Future Part 3, They were back in the 1880s, and they had to get this. They got this locomotive, and they were trying to push the DeLorean back up to 88 miles an hour. And so they had to do a train heist to use the train. Anyway, I believe that the person who directed the photography, the DP, was the same director of photography that worked on this scene.
Oh, wow.
So I believe.
Yeah, that makes sense.
I don't remember his name, but, and I think that that's a really cool homage, if that's the case, if that is indeed true.
Yeah, so, and some of the best action scenes like we've seen in Star Wars for a long time. I mean, the fight on top of the train, and you know, and when the one Tusken who's been training Boba Fett, when he goes into the train, you just see him going through the train, and you just see like one guy up there just going down, then he pops back up and looks around and goes, and that was just
so good. Such great action. Such great, you know, the only thing that I was missing, and I will talk about this a little bit, I am not as impressed with either episode's music. I do like the voices. I like the chanting. I like, again, this kind of you know, tribal. Pacific Islander,
yeah,
you know, almost style, yeah. That they're almost pulling a lot of this New Zealand tribalness into the story. And I love that. And I love that they do that a little bit with the music. There was a little theme, that little doom, 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 like kind of the shuffle, doom, 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 like that. But it's not enough.
Yeah.
You know, The Mandalorian, there was a distinctive theme. And we don't have that associated with this. And so I'll give it the season. And then I'll kind of determine. Now I'm gonna tell you, be honest with you, I'm not a huge Ludwig Göransson fan from the original one either, from Mandalorian. And I just feel as though I understand people like it. It's different. I give him that. It's more worldly. It's more world instrument. I get that too. I like that part about it. But I just am not embracing it myself. Mm. It's not connecting with me the way a John Williams score would. And I wish I could have heard that whole train sequence. Even like to me, in a lot of ways, even the sequence from Solo with the train.
Yeah.
I love the music for that. That's not John Williams, but except for some, you know, a few hints. But I forget the composer for that film. But I thought did a good job with that. I just wasn't getting. I didn't hate it. I didn't even dislike it. It just didn't connect with me. Is all I'm saying. Yeah. But again, I'll give it some more time to maybe let it sink in.
I love the fact that we get the Pikes. We haven't got the Pike Syndicate.
We got him a little bit. There was some in Solo.
Yeah.
But they were masked. So
we saw them. You know, for those of you who don't know, they're in the Star Wars universe, there are really three big crime syndicates. There's Crimson Dawn, there's the Hutts, and then there's the Pikes. Those are like the three big. So, and the fact that, you know, you can tell the power vacuum. They talked about this a little bit in the first episode of season two of The Mandalorian, of the power vacuum when the Empire, when Jabba died and the Empire both were destroyed, there was this power vacuum. And because they, when Jabba was around, the Pikes would not have dared come to Tatooine because that was Jabba's territory and Jabba would have taken care of them quite well, not in the good sense either, but
no. And now with them gone, with Jabba gone, they're just kind of muscling in and setting up a route, you know. That's what this train was doing.
Setting up
a spice route, which is of course
what again, the Pikes do. That's right. The Pikes, kind of their forte. It seems like to be what, you know, each crime syndicate seems to be focused on one thing. You know, the Pikes were very much into spice.
Right.
You know, the Hutts, Hutts were slavers.
Slavers, were they also gambling?
Gambling, yeah, slavers, gambling. I'm not sure what Crimson Dawn whatever they could.
I think they're kind of like picking up whatever the other two don't want to do. So
yeah.
All right. Well, if we want to put a little connection on anything else at the end, we could do that for next week. But
yeah. Before we get going, we have a little announcement to make. I'm not very good at doing these, I guess you call them commercials. If you ever wanted to be a part of War of the Stars and help out grow the channel, we have an opportunity for you. We are looking for a social media manager, someone who can help us with our just getting out there, getting the word out for War of the Stars. We're looking for a person who really knows how to use social media and can kind of help grow the channel. So if that is you, you can email us warofthestars1@gmail.com. Send your resume in. Just know that this is a unpaid position, at least for the time being. you know, we're not making very much money from this, but we're just wanting to get the word out there and get as many people to listen to War of the Stars as we can and really get the word out there, because I think this is a pretty good show. I mean,
I do too.
I do too. Yeah. Well, as we wrap up, what do you tell the fine people out there where they can find you?
Okay, well, when I'm not doing War of the Stars, I have a YouTube channel, Darth Tuba Star Wars Unboxing Show, where you can watch all sorts of videos that I do put out usually twice a week on Sundays and Wednesdays. And you can find me there. Just do a search of Darth Tuba. Or you can look me up on Twitter and Instagram at Darth Tuba, Darth Tuba's Star Wars Unboxing page on Facebook. Or you can email me darthtuba77@gmail.com.
All right. As for us right here, you can find us, as I said, warthestars1@gmail.com. Email us your questions, your comments, what you think of the show. We always love to hear from you guys. And who knows, we get enough letters, we might one day do a mailbag show and answer some fan letters. You can also check us out on Facebook. Look at our Facebook group. Just check out War of the Stars on Facebook. We are also on Instagram now. You can check us out there. Just again, search War of the Stars, a Star Wars podcast. Of course, we're also on Twitter at War of the Stars 1. Patreon.com/War of the Stars. As you can see, Will here is wearing one of our awesome new awesome t-shirts. One of a couple of designs we got. So yeah, check that out. Great gift to give. You could also put it on mugs, backpacks, you name it. The link is on our Twitter page. I'll put the link up on our other social media pages too. If you are not able to watch the show live, which we really invite you to, we love hearing the comments and seeing the comments from you guys out there. You can check us out anywhere that fine podcasts are heard, Twitch, Spotify, Apple Podcasts. Remember, if you're listening to us on Apple Podcasts, give us a 5-star review. Tell us how much you like the show. And yeah.
All right, cool.
That about does it. So as always, remember, this isn't just my Star Wars. This isn't just your Star Wars. This is our Star Wars. Until next time, may the Force be with you.
Till the spires, everyone.